Hey guys, and welcome to the free-to-play spoiler cast for The Last of Us, which, if you listened to the last podcast, then you know that we were trying to get people together for this one, and we got volunteers! We have Javier Ustino from... You might know him better if you listen to free-to-play as Lightor. Because you've heard those stories.
About Molotov cocktails.
Yes. And Wes once leaving him to die.
You know, I still remember that one. Well, hey guys.
We also have Joe Malta.
Hello.
And Joe's credentials for this is that he's also finished The Last of Us.
And also has great techno. Just brings the techno everywhere he goes.
That was my phone.
And we also have Free to Play regular Mark Bradshaw.
Hey, just changing up the format here. We were going to talk about The Last of Us, which was the game.
This is about Rogue Legacy.
Yeah, it's now about Rogue Legacy because it is now Game of the Year 2013, so this is now the Rogue Legacy spoiler cast. Spoiler one, there's a giant eyeball. Spoiler two, there's a giant skull. I haven't gone any further than that. I hope you guys don't spoil the rest of the bosses for me, but you can go ahead and talk about whatever you want.
So let's talk about the giant skull in The Last of Us.
The giant floating skull in The Last of Us.
That was weird and out of place.
Yeah, because it's such a grounded game. I was expecting more of that, like Epic or something. But okay, it's just a giant skull. The weird thing to me is like you just throw Ellie up onto the top of it, and she like scrunches around.
It goes without saying that we're going to spoil the shit out of The Last of Us. Listened to our Bioshock Infinite spoiler cast, you know that we don't stop at any point from the beginning of the game to the ending. So if you've not played the game, play it. This is not so ending-dependent as Bioshock Infinite was, but it's pretty goddamn story-dependent.
It's kind of backwards because, like, the biggest, like, spoiler happens within, like, the first 3 minutes of the game. So, we're going to talk about that. If you haven't, like, if you're just thinking, I'll just, like, listen to the first few minutes of the spoiler cast, don't, because this game just starts off brutal, and it stays on your neck and keeps hitting you in the head. So, please... If you've not played this game, if you just say, I've listened to some quick looks or whatever, stop. Go buy the game. Go buy PlayStation 3. That may be necessary. Buy the game and then come back and listen to us. It's an expensive proposition, but it's worth it.
So why don't we start there with the beginning?
Yes.
That was a really strong opening.
Yeah, it's strong opening and just surprising. Do we just go ahead and talk about the part where they kill his daughter in the first 3 minutes of this fucking game.
Zombie Albert, they don't call them zombies, but they're fucking zombies.
They're zombies. Get over it.
Joel takes his daughter out to find safety, and they end up in a confrontation with a soldier who reluctantly shoots her.
Yeah, I'm not exactly sure what orders he was following. Just probably like the most evil general in the history of mankind. I got a little girl over here. A guy with his little girl looking at him. Oh, you want me to shoot him? Well, okay. Number one, that's still a war crime. Okay. I don't care what you were trying to do there, Mr. Soldier Man. But whatever. The other thing that surprised me, I lost track of exactly the look of Ellie, you know, because Ellen Page is who they ripped the look of, right? Okay.
Definitely toned that down over the last 12 months.
A little bit, but they still owe Ellen Page money. But I forgot exactly what she looked like. So when you start playing as Joel's little girl, was she ever named at that point?
Sarah.
Okay. In my head, I thought, maybe this is actually a little girl in the game. So I'm playing it. Well, okay, I guess she changes her hair or whatever. They kind of look the same to me. And it's dead.
It's weird how so you start that game as Sarah. Well, you start watching a cutscene first, but then you start actually playing as Sarah.
Yeah.
And you're just sort of wandering around and you're taking in like the fact that the world's going to hell from the safety of your home.
Mm-hmm.
And I love the part when you first go downstairs and you see Joel rush in through the patio door.
Yeah.
And I start approaching it to figure out what the hell he was just doing. And he says, "Sarah, back away from there." I was like, whoa, that's... How did they know I was doing that?
Did you go into his bedroom first when you're upstairs?
Yeah.
Okay. That's just the way this game like brings about this a feeling of impending doom. It is very television like in that way. I guess if you know what I'm talking about, like just it's like they're setting up something enormous, but it's also very grounded.
Well, the entire opening sequence, and I include up until the time that Sarah gets shot, is basically a parallel for the rest of the game.
Yeah.
Because it's supposed to, the part where you're playing as Sarah is supposed to contrast directly with the part where you play as Ellie.
Yeah.
Because the whole part is Joel and his brother are trying to protect Sarah. And then once Joel is laid out, 20 years later, it's Ellie who's actually protecting Joel. And then that goes all the way up to the very second that Sarah's shot, because you have that exact same situation when Joel is with, oh, I've forgotten her name. The Firefly girl.
Oh, Marlene?
Marlene, yeah. You have that same confrontation where Joel is standing there with the little girl in his arms.
Oh, yeah.
And he has to make a choice. Like, he could not protect Sarah, but there he's the one with the gun. Marlene very specifically puts her gun away.
Yeah.
You know, to me, that intro pretty much was probably the strongest opening for a game that I have ever played. I mean, it really like set the tone, it set the mood for the rest of the game for me. Like when you start playing as Sarah, you know, just this feeling of loneliness, like you know that there's something off going around. If you go inside Joel's room, you see the newscast on TV telling about, hey, there's something weird going on. Well, the game tells you that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then it's, you know, I guess this feeling of despair that when I finished that intro, I just pretty much had to pause the game and take a deep breath and just wait, like,
yeah.
Oh boy.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that game has like a few moments like that. And that, it's kind of rare you see any game where you put down the controller and you just like, holy shit, what just happened? Like, and we've had actually a couple this year already with Bioshock Infinite. But this game, there's like two or three moments in this game where it forces you to do that. And
I do want to give Naughty Dog a lot of credit here because they had the balls to not have many trophies in this game. And that really helped to... I don't turn notifications off because I want to see if somebody's online or messaging me or whatever. But having something that pops up saying like, "Click a stand, you killed the clicker," that would have been stupid.
Yeah. I think that happened in Bioshock Infinite quite a while too. Like especially the achievements it's had for like killing so many number of enemies with a certain gun, and then you just wind up just using that gun just completely breaks you out of that. The more about the intro though. The intro just really sets up that no one is safe in this game. You're not going to have any respite at all.
Going forward. Mm-hmm. And it's great because you're running past all these people and they ultimately kind of don't matter. And that's sort of the theme of Last of Us, is that this game is only about Joel and the periphery around him.
Yeah.
And anyone else, like the world itself is kind of, it's fucked and there's nothing you can do about it.
Yeah. We're just going to have this very narrow focus on Joel and immediately what Joel is caring about at any given point in time. A good example of that is you're running away from a zombie in this. And did anybody else look back during the zombie when you're running away at the end?
Okay. Oh, yeah, I did.
I didn't. I was freaking terrified because I'm pretty sure if I stopped or looked back that zombie was going to eat me and my daughter. It just terrified me. Just one of the very few moments of real tension I could feel in a video game that's not just like a scare closet sort of deal, like you get out of Dead Space, but just tension and dread. Yeah, jump scare, thank you. Just tension and dread because of what's behind you.
I tried to turn around and see at the look behind, thinking like, oh, maybe I can run towards the camera and just spin the camera around to look behind me. But that's when I started to run out. Wait, the controls in this game is actually a little stiff. It makes you kind of put a little bit more consideration into your movements.
Yeah.
So when Joel started very slowly spinning around and I saw all these zombies, I pretty much got halfway through the turn and just turned back around and started running because I would have died.
Yeah, I couldn't deal with that. I did not need to care at all. Speaking of like
turning around, there's this part where you're still playing as Sarah and you're in the back of the car. Mm-hmm. And Joel's brother, whose name I've also forgotten.
Tom.
Okay, so he drives past a couple of people who are like begging for help because their car broke down. And you can turn around and you can watch as your car just drives past and then as you're going out of the way. And at some point, like, you see him like jumping up and down screaming for help. And then he just sort of like looks despondent. And then you don't see enough of it to know what's going to happen next, but you realize there was this person here that you could have helped, and then you just left to die.
Yeah, also tells you a lot about the morality of the game. This game isn't going to have a moral system. It's
right.
It's just about you and your survival and trying to take care of the people that you love. And, you know, it's a rough, it's kind of a, it's heartless, kind of, but you can only take care of the people that you most care about.
Well, again, it's that first 20 minutes set up the themes of the game. That if you trust anybody, you're going to get fucked, so don't trust anyone. And the only people you really trust in those games either get fucked because of you, or they will fuck you over. Like also, Ellie in the Winter chapter.
I also love how this game, right off the bat, it doesn't explain anything. You're just left to infer. Like, when Joel picks up, is on the phone, he's talking to his boss. In any other video game, it would have, or basically any other media, like, it would have went out of its way to tell you exactly what's going on, if it, like, any, like, poor storytelling would have done. This trust that you don't need to know this. There's a large chunk of information you just don't need to know and you're never going to know. You never know of the fate of those people you drove past. They're probably dead. That you
well,
never
I mean, even
know.
Closer to that, like, I saw people complaining that, oh, we don't know whatever happened to Joel's wife. And I'm like, it doesn't fucking matter.
Yeah, and it was beautiful the way it handled that. It just, like, little snippets and just, you could tell the loss. It was just meant so much to him that they never touched on it. And it's better because of that. If they tried to explain that, it would have been worse. Yeah.
You just know she's not there and Joe was raising Sarah alone. And that part's important. That's the key to the game.
Yeah.
You know, one part that really did have a bit of impact on me is that when you are Sarah in the car and you can look around, did any of you look at the hospital when you drove past it?
Maybe. Why?
A little bit, only to notice that there were zombies streaming out of it, and holy shit, get out of there. But yeah.
It's like, probably that intro of the game is the only part in the game where you're going to see absolute, complete, uncontrolled chaos. And it was really interesting because in that hospital, you start seeing employees, nurses, doctors running out, then you see all of these patients chasing after them. It's like, that's when you can really start to see, oh shit, this is real. You know, before that, you only see people asking for help or what you hear on the radio or on the news.
Yeah, I think Left 4 Dead's going on over there. You're in a different game.
Yeah. Nice.
That is such an amazing intro, and you compare it to Uncharted 2 with when you're sneaking into that museum, and it's night and day. They actually set up a mature adult I don't want to say realistic, but something that the rest of the game completely follows through on. Well, Uncharted 2 did the exact opposite to its detriment.
Yeah, they wanted to be like, it wanted to be a movie. It's not realistic because, I mean, at the end of the day, you're talking about a zombie invasion and all sorts of really dumb things, but I've used this word a couple times already, but grounded. This is a very grounded video game. And one of the things that interests me most is comparing this to Bioshock Infinite. And the biggest criticism we always had for Bioshock Infinite is, like, it had this amazing story, it had this amazing universe, but the only interaction you had was just killing everything. Now, in this universe, you're also killing pretty much everything, but for whatever reason, it feels a lot different. You don't feel like a Superman out there with a machine gun just, like, mowing down wave after wave of enemy. You are just surviving. You are fucked if anything goes wrong.
It sometimes goes a little too far into that direction. Like, there are situations where I just killed 30 guys for no real reason other than because I had to, because, like, it wouldn't let me proceed unless I did that.
Yeah, that's one of my only complaints with the game is it has those areas where you can get, where you're expected to just, like, slip through. Like, at the end of the game where you have the hospital, you can just slip through past all those guards and never fight a single one of them, except for the couple that you can just knock out to get past.
I had my problems with that end game.
Yeah.
Then we'll talk about that later. But yeah.
But it will also just have rooms where you have to kill everything, and you don't know until you've failed, like, 4 or 5 times trying to get through.
There's times where I've killed everything, and then Joel will say, like, all right, time to go through. I was like, wait, I was supposed to do that?
Yeah. I thought I was just being very sloppy. Okay, well, it would be nice if you told me that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty much my one complaint with the game is that, like Uncharted, it kind of telegraphs what's going to go on in that area. Like, for example, at the start, in one of the first areas of the game, you first see, like, an area filled with waist-high cover when you're going to go look for Robert, I think it's the guy's name, with Tess.
Yeah. Yeah.
And at first I was like, this is just going to be a shooter. But then, thankfully, the game, you can't go in guns blazing with your usual style. You got to go a bit more stealthily.
Yeah. At that point in the game, you had like 4 bullets. Yeah. And later in the game, you start having enough options that you can pretty much handle anything. And that's when it got a little too shootery for my taste. But I really liked early in the game where there was no way you could handle every oncoming thing.
Well, it also set up situations where, at least at the beginning, you were never facing more than two guys at once. Like, if a third guy showed up, well, everything was blown out of hell. Like, at that point where he was talking about when it shows up the waist-high bunkers for no real good reason. There's just cargo crates just lying around here. Like, there's just 3 people, and you have Helper, and that it wasn't really a shootout. Yeah. You're just more like just walking into this warehouse and murdering 3 dudes.
You're right.
Yeah. Still got to be really careful, though.
Oh, you do. Yeah.
And the thing is that while I guess it managed to, subvert my expectations at that moment, after a while in the game, I started to realize whenever there were bricks or bottles around, that just meant that eventually there's going to be some kind of fight going on, breaking out here, even if it's peaceful now, and I better start scavenging for supplies.
There were a few instances where, like, it would set up bottles and then you never come back to them, or, like, you would go into an area and then that fight wouldn't happen for, like, another half hour until you had to backtrack through that area. But I think they could have avoided a lot of that by just having bottles around everywhere. I mean, why not?
Well, they do have bottles around in most places, though. There was this one point where I decided to exchange my brick for a bottle because I heard clickers up ahead. So I do that. It was a bottle for a brick. So the bottle just sort of drops out of my inventory and that makes noise. Yeah. And suddenly the guard nearby was like, what the hell was that?
I guess that makes sense though. Is there an advantage to using like bricks over bottles? I just assume that
you can melee with bricks and they do decent damage.
Okay, I guess the bottles probably make more noise then. So yeah, I would assume like you could.
They kind of stun them, and after you stun them, melee attacks do more damage.
Right, you can one-hit kill clickers if you already stun them with a melee weapon.
I wasn't aware of that. Okay.
It makes a ton of noise though, so it's only like if they're the last thing there, it works.
It's very handy for if you made a noise and you've got 2 guards going in. Then you equip the drawable in your hand, stun one, finish it off, then take on the other one the fastest way.
The Meanwhile, AI in the game is really inconsistent. Like, super inconsistent.
I don't know if it's the AI in the game that's inconsistent or just, like, the vision cones are inconsistent. Because sometimes the dudes are just completely blind except for the spot directly in front of them. And sometimes they will look behind a sofa because they're a dickhead. And you can't tell.
Sometimes they're, like, super hyper-aware super soldiers, and other times it's like, something's throwing grenades from behind that bunker. Let's not check it out. Yeah. Because that's how I got through that final area, is that I just threw all my grenades, and nobody came to see where they're coming from.
I never had enough bullets to, like, get through that final part, so I just, like, snuck around and just, like, strangled guys.
See, that's
Except
what I tried
for the doctor,
to do.
Just kill the doctor, yeah.
I kind of lost patience with stealth at that point in the game. And
well,
I just
you were playing the game for a long while at that point, though. So
yeah,
that was why.
It's a really long game, and I'm not... Like, there's nothing in there that I would cut, yet at the same time, I don't think I should be feeling at any point that, hey, I really wish this were over.
It's kind of... It doesn't have that Okami problem where, like, you think the game's going to end, and then it just keeps going. Except for Winter. That game managed to convince me at the Winter chapter that everything was gone to hell. So, I don't know, you get through Pittsburgh, and I thought, well, we're supposed to be getting to, like, I remember there being Wyoming at some point. Someone talked about Wyoming, and we're just in Pittsburgh. It seems like we should have a long while to go, but it maybe need, like, I don't want to say a progress meter, but something to better let you know what's going on.
Well, it technically has a progress thing, because every time you go to load your game, it says X percent.
Oh, well, okay, I guess there is that. That's kind of, it's kind of out of the way, though. Not actually part of the system. But yeah.
All right, so let's talk about this game thematically.
Okay.
I feel like if you've seen decent numbers of zombie things, you know exactly where every part of the, like, every individual story beat will go.
Yeah.
But I think it did a better job of focusing on the human element way more than it did than parts of The Walking Dead did.
Yeah, and there were parts of it that are clearly like either homages to Walking Dead. I thought it was more of a 28 Days Later vibe than The Walking Dead, though. There were a couple of areas which I couldn't tell if like they were just like directly like referencing The Walking Dead or this is just the way things are, because there's this one house in the suburban area that looks almost exactly like the house where like Lee meets Clementine for the first time.
Yeah, Clem's tree house in the back.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure
that's an intentional reference.
Yeah, I thought it was either an intentional reference or, okay, this is the way houses are in suburbia. If it was an intentional reference, then good on them.
My takeaway from the game as a whole, though, is that it's very clearly this is something we can go back to Bioshock Infinite 2 as well, but it's a huge-ass metaphor for fatherhood.
Yeah, and just going off this year's themes of teaching little girls how to murder people very efficiently.
But
this
is
the third game that's happened.
Yeah. Like, there's the initial thing of like, oh, Joel doesn't really want to get into this, he's scared, and then he starts warming up to her, and eventually she has to protect him. But I mean, the most on-the-nose part of it is when you take her to college in the fall.
Oh, wow, I didn't even notice that. But yeah, that is a good, very good reference. Yeah, that's pretty cool.
At that point, it's sort of, you know, that I get what you're going for, Naughty Dog. You don't need to hammer it in quite so much. But yeah. It reflects back on the ending, is that every father is going to say that their daughter means the world to them, and no one's ever going to get the choice of whether that actually, like, you can't really prove that. And right. Joel made the decision that he cares more about his surrogate daughter than he does the world.
Yeah. And hopefully you can do better for your daughter than sending her off to University of Eastern Colorado, which probably doesn't exist.
I think it does exist, but the campus is made up.
Yeah. Just a weird aside there. For the longest time, they're talking about that the science building there looking like a giant mirror. And I just walked in and I said, nothing here looks remotely like a giant mirror, including the building that you're telling me to walk into. It's mirrored, but it's not a giant mirror. That's completely different.
They took the most roundabout path to get to that science building.
It's one of the weird things about the game's design. It's like everywhere you want to go outside, they'll like show like a landmark that you're walking toward. But as a result, they have to hide that landmark every once in a while. So like the bridge in Philadelphia, no, Pittsburgh rather, like they would hide it behind buildings and they swing behind buildings and there it is again. In this campus though, it's like by far the largest building there. And you don't notice it until you're 5 feet in front of the fucking thing. How did that happen? Where was this huge science building hiding the entire time? But that's
insight.
Joe, you haven't talked much. Thematically, what do you think of The Last of Us?
I mostly agree with what you guys said. It's about, you know, fatherhood.
Yeah.
I think...
go ahead.
I think a lot of it, you know, at least what I saw, it's most like... And it kind of you can kind of see it in the gameplay as well. It's you just keep going on. People die around you, you know, people get infected, but you just gotta keep going, you just gotta keep on living. If you stop in an area filled with infected or clickers, you're eventually gonna die.
Yeah, and it's kind of weird to be like, obstinately a zombie game, like, there's just a handful of zombie fights this entire game.
Right, like it was more about people.
Yeah, and... Mm-hmm. I know the overall theme is fatherhood and survival. In a weird way, it seems like a very like Republican video game, because if you ever try to go out of your way to help someone else, you're fucked. And so the only thing you can really do is to help the people immediately around you and just like leave the other people to just fend for themselves.
Well, that's the thing. Whenever Joel started trusting people who weren't Ellie, it just all went badly.
Yeah, like the two brothers you find in Pittsburgh.
Right. Which is a critical moment for Ellie, for one, because she lost a friend, but
yeah.
You see
the only friend she made in her entire life apparently up to this point, And just, geez.
I think that's one of the things that affected Joel and made him make the choices he did, is that he knew, or he started thinking how he would react if he lost Ellie.
Yeah.
And that's why he couldn't leave her with her brother, or with his brother.
To correct you a bit, Mark, sorry. It's actually when she explains that, probably for the saddest part of that game for me was when she's explaining about what happened to her best friend. And said they both got infected at the same time. Like, hey, it'll be romantic. Let's all both die at the same time. But then she doesn't die. Point, yeah. She lives. And she's like, this guy, this boy, Tom, I forget what his name was. It's the first, I guess, friend that's the same age since that girl, because after that she's only been hanging around with Marlene and Joel and Tess.
Yeah, and apparently, well, I guess it was like, by the time you meet Ellie, it's been 3 weeks since she got bit, so 3 weeks past that point. So yeah, she's just been thrown in it this entire time.
And objectively, I think the choice Joel made at the end was wrong. But
I don't know if his decision could be right or wrong. Because, I mean, nothing's to say that the Fireflies were going to be correct. And nothing's to say that Joel wasn't correct. Maybe there were plenty of other people out there who were immune to it. But I don't...
I think Ellie, given the choice, and Joel knew that given the choice, she would have gladly died for even the chance.
Yeah, she would have, but then again, she was a kid, and she couldn't be trusted to make... Maybe that's another theme that they're going for here. A child can't really be trusted with that moment of a choice. Like, she has... And what... Yeah, okay, it fucks humanity for a while, but she has to be informed enough and to live long enough to make an informed choice in that. Because I'm not sure if she would realize that she's actually going to die if this happens.
Well, the entire point of, like... You can't wait. That's sort of the thing. Every time they go to a place where the Fireflies should be, they've already gone because they're backed into a corner.
Yeah.
So that was the moment, and that was the moment that they passed on, and who knows if the Fireflies will still be around in 10 years. Though there's a sort of insidious nature to them that I don't know that it was meant to come across that way, but I'm not sure I trusted them generally. Not in terms of competence, just in, like, I don't know that they're really doing this for the world's best interests.
Yeah, I would, pretty shady.
Yeah, they did. They didn't seem entirely competent either. I mean, we're just supposed to be able to trust that they can, like, perform brain surgery on this girl with using the shitty-ass equipment they've got? I'm not sure about that, guys.
I mean, and they probably have actual brain surgeons. It's only been 20 years. That's one of the... It's a freshly post-apocalyptic world.
Guy who killed might be the last brain surgeon.
Yeah, and you kill that last brain surgeon trying to get to your little girl. I assume you have to kill him, right? Because I did.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think you have to.
You have to.
Okay. I did shoot him just on reflex.
I set him on fire. I had a fire flamethrower, and yeah, he died.
Grabbed his scalpel and stabbed him.
That's also
good.
I
shot him with El Diablo.
Yeah, I tried maybe use a melee attack to push him out of the way, because by that point, I didn't want to kill anymore. But then I got the animation that Joe just described.
You bring up a good point, like not wanting to kill anymore. There were like some situations in this game where I was just sent into like a fatherly rage. I was just going to kill everyone that ever like threatened Ellie. And it was one of those things where Naughty Dog was saying, oh, we're going to make you feel for this little girl. And like the gaming community said, kind of rolled their eyes and said, yeah, whatever. We'll see that when we see it. And it actually did make me feel for this little girl. Like when she was kidnapped in the winter section, and like you go into that town, you don't have to kill all those people. In fact, you can kind of just sneak your way to the restaurant. I killed every last one of those bastards I could see, because they hurt Ellie and they were going to pay for that.
Like the ambient dialogue there was pretty great, where Joel was just screaming at them the entire time for demanding where Ellie is.
Yeah, and they're like, what the hell are you talking about? What little girl? And it took them a while to figure out what the hell's going on.
Speaking of like ambient dialogue, I love the fact that like Ellie would just occasionally hum songs.
You know, I liked it as a flavor thing, but it's also kind of annoying when I was always like crouched in like the detective vision mode because I didn't know if there was a zombie around the corner or not. But here comes Ellie just like whistling. It's like, hey, what's going on? Any zombies around? I don't know. Hope they don't kill us.
I turned that detective thing off immediately. And I think it made for a more tense, though probably more retried game.
I would like to, I don't know if there's like an achievement for like playing the game without the with detective vision turned completely off. No. I'd like to go for that. Okay.
You know, but I think it makes for a better game in general.
Speaking of ambient dialogue, something that I really liked, and I guess it kind of bothered me at first, but then I kind of warmed up to it, is that, you know, when you go into Pittsburgh, it's all shoot first, don't even bother asking questions. Like, everyone's just fighting without even bothering to talk or anything.
Yeah.
Well, because these guys, well, they're obviously going to try to kill you immediately for your supplies and all that stuff. But then, you know, it's you're this one... you know, tag team duo that's gone off and killed probably like 50 or 60 people. And eventually you start hearing like, oh man, there's like this crazy madman that's running around with a little girl.
Yeah. And then it's like you wiped out an entire patrol. It's like, that can't be possible. You're lying.
And like, then when you get to winter, when Ellie's meeting with David, it's like, this all happens for a reason because there's this little girl and this madman just went and wiped out like a bunch of my guys, and it's like you guys are like,
yeah, that was us.
That guy's name was, it wasn't Dave. What was it?
It was David.
David. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. He's probably a pedophile, nice, right? Yeah. Like, that's not only my interpretation.
He definitely came off that way.
Yeah, I don't know if he started off as a pedophile or just like a really charismatic dude who didn't like have a lot of options with considering how many women were left in the world, which apparently Ellie and like the two other ladies you met were the only ones around. So,
well, they referenced those guys having wives and kids.
Okay.
So yeah, there was probably one, more.
Yeah, there was one when Ellie breaks out and you start that fight with David, or no, you're sneaking around. They say, oh, no, let's get the kids and save them because Ellie's loose and she's infected and is going to kill everyone. So, yeah, there were the kids around.
But they reference Ellie being that guy's pet, which is the point where, like, yeah that guy is probably a pedophile.
Yeah, and it kind of made me feel really, like, bad because you don't know how much time had passed before Joel wakes up. Like, maybe it was, like, a couple hours. Maybe it was, like, a week. And by that point, Ellie's probably dead or worse because you know what was going to happen to her. So I just went through the entire section with just a feeling of dread, which led to everyone dying.
Think of, like, non-obvious character things. The point where I realized that Bill was gay was actually a pretty... Because they don't actually call attention to it. They're just like, yeah.
I didn't notice that until like they made like the completely unnecessary like gay porno mag joke.
I think that was necessary for Ellie because she's a 13-year-old girl and she's curious about these sort of things.
I guess it just seemed kind of out of place for the tone of the game. Just a sec.
But I don't see how you didn't notice that when you read the note from his partner.
I read the note from the partner, and the partner just seemed like really bitter and just kind of angry that.
Yeah.
He seemed like he pissed off because Bill didn't want to leave. It didn't seem like to me that they were jilted lovers. I didn't get that at all.
Well, then you see Bill saying only that that's him, that idiot would wear that shirt.
Yeah, the way he talked about him definitely made it seem like they were lovers.
I didn't get it. Did anyone else, like, when they found the letter, like, you can choose not to give it to him and just, give it. Yeah, you can give him the letter. Well, you can, like, choose, like, just, like, go to the back of the truck and just push it. Or you can give him the letter. And just giving him the letter is the biggest asshole thing in the world to do because this person's basically saying, fuck you, fuck you.
You know? I mean, I feel like that probably gave him some closure, too.
But, you know, I saw it a different way of why this guy hated Bill. It's that, you know, maybe Bill was in love with this guy, but he wasn't, like, he saw Bill as another man, as a way to survive in this world.
Yeah.
And maybe, you know, they were both wanting different things out of each other. And I guess in a way, in the long term, it wasn't what... Well, it didn't end well, I guess.
Well, speaking of lovers, were Tess and Joel an actual couple?
I actually read the TV Tropes section on this. So go ahead, I'm sorry. Joe?
I was just going to say, it kind of seemed that way, yeah.
Yeah, I was reading the TV Tropes on this, and they weren't. until like the voice actor forced the issue and made them like allude more to it, that they tried to be lovers, but Joel, just because like he's been through so much shit, he can't like commit at all. So they were going to be, but it was like unrequited love. She wanted it, but he couldn't deal with it.
I think the only attention I really paid to it was when Tess actually gets infected, that she just says to him, look, I know there's at least enough between us for you to do this for me.
Yeah.
Which, when you think about it, he didn't really do.
How's that?
Because Tess wanted him to save the world, and he didn't. He made the choice that Ellie was more important.
He is a very selfish sort of thing to do. And more about the, I don't know if we're like, we're skipping ahead, been talking about the end, but it was pulling her out the thing that like turned you against it, or lying to her about it?
It's not a matter of being against it. I completely understand why he did it, because...
Yeah. Well, which one do you not agree with his choice, though?
I think that if Ellie were given the choice, she would have died. And that's probably like making that world better is purely by a logistical standpoint, that one person doesn't weigh up to the weight of the world.
You know, I happen to disagree a bit with that, because I think that deep down, Ellie didn't want to die, but knew that she probably had to, because like she has been through all this shit since the incident with her best friend, everything with Joel, seeing everything go to shit and die. But she finally, after being abandoned by her mother, after being switched around from Marlene and losing all of her friends and family, she finally found someone who she cared about and who cared about her. But she knew that she needed to do this for the world. And that's why I guess I think that she knows that Joel is lying to her at the end, but she wants to know how committed Joel is to this lie, because deep down, she wants to stay with Joel.
But I mean, how long is that going to last? Joel's in his 50s, and this is a world that does not, stay. How many old people did you see in that game?
Like Joel, and that's about it.
Yeah.
Well, there was a couple in Boston when you're in the market. There was a couple of guys older than Joel was. But they weren't like, they were just like in the market, like running a stall.
But let's be realistic here. Sure, the Fireflies could have had good scientists, but you need to mass produce a vaccine. And this is a world where there are probably no standing factories actively producing the proper conditions. So, and suppose that you get at least one vial of vaccine, you still have to get that vaccine somewhere else. And you have to cross, let's say you have to cross to Pittsburgh, you're going to get ambushed. You know, there is absolutely no guarantee that the world would have been saved.
The best thing they could have done, I think, would be to vaccinate themselves.
Just vaccinate themselves and just, hey, now we're fine, we're just going to repopulate humanity. Sorry.
Ellie has a line that when you're heading to the Firefly base, she says, this whole thing can't be for nothing.
Yeah.
And I think she knows that there's a chance that it all is. And that's the line that always stuck with me when Joel was making his choice, that, well, it's a completely extraordinary sort of crazy act of a person living in a zombie world. It's probably a fairly ordinary act of fatherhood.
It probably is. It's a very selfish act, too. The thing that gets me about the entire sequence is, if you could convince me that Ellie was told what was going to happen. Because I don't think she ever was. They just put her under and they just told her everything's going to be fine.
I don't think she
was already knocked out from nearly drowning.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, chances are she never like regained consciousness. Yeah. She never was allowed to make that choice. And what if Joel knew? Now I'm just hypothesizing, but what if Joel knew that? And like she was never allowed to decide if she wants to die or not. I mean, you're trying to save humanity, but that in itself is unethical and wrong. I understand like the selfish choice that Joel made, it ultimately was selfish, but I could understand why, from that point of view, he would do that.
Yeah.
Also, you have to remember that the both of them, before they reach the Fireflies, they're always under the impression of like, oh, they're just going to take a couple of samples of blood, and that'll be it. That they're just gonna after they do that, they're gonna go back over there and live with Tom, and he's gonna teach her how to play football and how to whistle and sing and other stuff.
Yeah. Oh, and she's gonna live.
I don't think she knew that. I think she was saying all that just to make Joel feel better.
Man, I think she saw like a future. Like she was never the kind of character who thought she was doomed and the entire world was doomed. She was optimistic. She wanted a better future for herself, and she saw Joel and maybe even the people at Jackson Hole as being part of that future. She was not a nihilist during this whole deal.
I think when, I forgot the other guy's name, the Henry's brother, when he died, that was when he started out, she's very chipper, but she says these occasional things that sound like she's incredibly depressed about the whole thing.
Yeah, I don't know if it was like just this shock of growing up, or just like she's actually now traumatized and depressed and may now be screwed over forever. But she seemed to be better, like when you got like the giraffe scene, the most magical part. Like I hate to use the word magical, but that's the only thing you can use for it. Just gorgeous magical scene with this freaking giraffe herd running around in. I don't know how they managed to live this long in this campus at this university, but just. Amazing, amazing scene. But that seemed like, okay, she had snapped out of whatever had happened to her, and she was ready to go on living.
Marlene made a fairly decent point that what life is there for Ellie after this? Because, I mean, even along the way on that journey, she nearly got raped and eaten.
Well, what life is there for anyone in Jackson? Because they're making a stand there. They'd say, we can make not only our own lives better, we can help everyone out who gets here.
But it goes back to her line that it can't be for nothing. If she died on that field, her life kind of... She made Joel a little happy. That's basically what her life amounted to. But if she had given the world a vaccine, even if there was only a 1% chance, I think she would have appreciated that chance more.
What if it wasn't about that? What if it was just about having something to believe in? The entire point of that trip wasn't about... saving humanity on this very iffy chance. It's just her going back and being happy and having this one little glimmer of hope in her life. Something to believe in, that everything can be better. Maybe that's what it was all about.
But I think that at least when you find Marlene's logs and everything, Marlene told her that she would be going to the Fireflies to save humanity, to avoid more incidents like her friend, because Marlene was with her since that incident. But then you see that, Henry's brother got infected.
Mm-hmm.
She probably, deep down inside, I guess, I don't know.
Well, when you read Marlene's stuff, when you actually get to the hospital, she's completely torn up about it. The face she put on with Joel was entirely, she was trying to put on a strong face and an authoritarian thing because she knew what a piece of crap she was being.
Yeah. Well, she also knew that she had to be very firm with Joel because Joel could kill everyone there if they weren't very firm with Joel.
And everyone did want to kill Joel before she stepped in because
Everyone was right, because they knew that Joel would murder everyone involved if you gave him that the chance to get back to Ellie.
Also, I think she needed to be that way because she was hoping, I guess, for some sort of validation from Joel. And when he took a moral absolutist stance, that just completely blew her away because she thought she had to do, she was doing the only thing she could do. And Joel was saying no, that there's another option.
The option was actually just to make him happy. It's like her option was, we're going to help humanity. And Joel's option was, well, I don't really give a shit. This is my daughter now, and I'm sorry, but I can't let this happen again.
Joel killed what are relatively innocent people just to get Ellie back.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. After Ellie gets kidnapped, there's a bit bit of a change of character in Joel. That's when you start seeing that he will do absolutely anything for this girl.
Right.
And he doesn't care who gets in the way.
Like the interrogation.
The interrogation, yeah. How he starts reacting to the guys, when Mark mentioned, hey, the ambient dialogue, he just starts screaming out loud, doesn't care who hears him, where is the girl, where is my girl? And then And then when he walks with Ellie out of the hospital, it was like, but it was talking when he just tells her, "Don't worry, baby girl." Like, if it was his actual daughter.
Right, because that whole scene is just the parallel to when he grabbed her in the beginning of the game.
Yeah.
Because he's still holding her the same way, and you're still running around all these soldiers, but none of them are... they have explicit orders not to shoot Joel, because he has Ellie with him. As opposed to the soldier that did.
What I would like to hear from opinion, because we none of us are fathers, like, see how a father who played that game thought about that decision.
I've talked to a number of fathers that have, and they all say that's what you do. That's fatherhood. Your girl is more important than anything else.
Yeah, so I could see that. And from that point of view, it's not even really a choice. It's like, yeah, you're going to do what you have to do, and you're even going to lie to your kid. Because as a father, you do have to lie to your children to make them feel better for an awful choice you make.
Doesn't it kind of seem like we're doing that more these days in games? Like, they're trying to tap into that fatherhood aspect of us? Like, Bioshock Infinite, you protected Elizabeth as a father figure. Like, look at The Walking Dead. Lee to Clem was entirely about that relationship.
You know, but honestly, I think Bioshock Infinite failed in that sense. Because I didn't feel that same connection I felt with Ellie or with Clementine. Like, I felt like Elizabeth was just this character in a video game. I guess she wasn't that real to me in a way. As how things happened in these games.
Well, Elizabeth was a little different because, I mean, she was this sheltered kid who never really had a father at all before the beginning of the game. And ultimately, she was, like, way more powerful than Booker was. I mean, Ellie, if you remove Joel from Ellie, Ellie is dead within an hour. Although, I guess Winter, like, the entire Winter chapter puts a lie to that. But, like, Ellie can't survive without Joel. Like, Ellie never abandoned Joel. But, like, Elizabeth could probably get out of Columbia without your help if she ever, like, just tapped into her powers.
Yeah, exactly. I saw her, Elizabeth, more like, I guess, a sister figure in a way, because you're both equal, you can both stand their grounds, but you see in Walking Dead and Last of Us that the fathers have to teach the little girls how to shoot a gun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which I felt was one of the weaker parts of The Walking Dead, because maybe that's it's tapping into the fatherhood thing again, but I never wanted to teach Clem how to kill.
I was like kind of heartbroken when Ellie shot the dude in the face, and I don't know if anybody else tried this, but there was that segment immediately following that where like you give Ellie like the sniper rifle. I was trying my hardest to just stealth through there so Ellie wouldn't try to shoot somebody. Eventually, it just all fell apart, and I could never get that done. But I just really didn't want her to have to take that step when she's actually murdering dudes.
Because, I mean, you have to give it up. The idea
that's
of
your innocence.
Your little girl being an innocent little girl all that time. Eventually she grows up, and it's more symbolic with Ellie than it is actually, you know, physical.
Yeah.
But you're still, all this time, it's a journey to hand Ellie off to someone else.
That is a good point, yeah. And every time you do about to hand her off somewhere else, you like step back, say, nope, I can't do it.
Well, I mean, the one time it actually came up, you had to do it, but then it was you couldn't give her to your brother, and then you take her to college. Then you can't. The idea that there is an end goal is probably something that tears fathers across the nation up.
Yeah.
That there's a day where your kids are going to be more than just the dependents in your life.
And who knows, maybe that in real life, maybe that's like the wedding. I don't know. It's not college. Like giving away at the wedding.
I think it's more like when they're able to live on their own completely independently, where they don't have to pay for anything. Like, let's say you get a job that you can live off. You know, you would only be calling your parents to say hi every now and then.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But it's... thematically, it was such a really consistent and good game, even if they leaned a little heavily on the tropes. Like, you knew that the moment when Tess was running forward, or when you saw her first get grabbed by that zombie in that room you couldn't access immediately, you knew, oh, Tess is bitten.
Yeah.
Then you knew that that kid was going to die. Then you knew that these guys were cannibals, slash whatever, they're not being honest.
Yeah. Oh, you knew right away that I wish I could remember those two guys' names, but you knew right away, as soon as Ellie goes up there at a conversation with the kid, that kid was bitten and he is fucking dead. And you could just see every beat. I guess that always makes it even better. Like, you could see every beat that was coming forward from that point forward, because there's no way the brother was going to live without his brother. So just.
Terrifying. In the back of my mind, I thought maybe the kid was going to bite Ellie and then Henry was going to figure out that, hey, she's not infected. Or he was going to try and shoot her as well.
Yeah, but you could definitely see what was going to happen there.
Mm-hmm. One thing I'm curious to see, you know, since there are points of the game where things can be different, like if you can give Bill the letter or not, you know that... Mm-hmm. That you are defending Ellie and the two boys from the infected at that point from the house.
The sniper rifle.
With the sniper rifle, exactly. But you've got one attacking the kid and the other attacking Henry.
Oh yeah.
So I'm wondering if there is some difference if you shoot the one that's attacking the kid, does Henry get this? Is there a change in what happens? Because I'm not entirely sure if it's actually possible or if it's the same outcome every time.
I think it's important that it be the kid, because it needs to be Ellie surviving something that her peers did not.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, Henry's a good 30 years younger than Joel, but he's still within Joel's tier, I guess. So it wouldn't be the same. But, yeah, I don't know that any game can ever be so... I don't want to call this game perfect, but every beat that it tried to hit, it hit well.
There were a couple of things that just a little heavy-handed on, like the bit with the brother, and just I knew it was going to happen, but I still wasn't happy when he shot himself in the head. I really didn't like that, because I think like games are just going to that too often now. They're just too ready to either do the mercy killing thing or the suicide thing. I think that's just. Really need to give that a break for a while, because it's all over the joint.
I think it needed to happen to present one option to Joel that could be him.
Yeah, and just like look at it and say, "Oh shit, I have to protect this little girl." There was when you're handing off, you're about to hand off Ellie to your brother, and Ellie freaks out and she just runs off, and just the entire like next hour just seems like just wild mood swings. Like, at one point, like, he says, oh, I gotta go find her. He's like, no, I hate you. It's like, and then within, like, 20 minutes later, he said, oh, all right, I guess I actually really do love Ellie, and I can't hand her over to the brother. I'm sorry. That seemed like, kind of whiplashy.
Yeah, that was a little weird. Actually, also, how did she get through there without alerting the bandits?
Yeah.
She's good. She's real good.
I found that actually, I don't know, I didn't seem too out of place with me, because... deep down, Ellie is still a teenager. You know,
well,
teenagers
I found
have
her
these weird mood swings.
I found her reactions fine. It was Joel's mood swings that were weird.
I guess Joel's just insane at that point. But still.
Yeah,
he was screaming at her like, you're not my daughter, so we're just going to go there. And then it was maybe 5 minutes until... Like, if there was something that happened with the bandits in the meantime, that would have been different.
Yeah.
But did you see how Ellie was looking at him or the tone of voice that Ellie was using was like, fine, I'll go with your brother to like... You know, she guilt-tripped him. You know, he started feeling very guilty about what he was about to do, and he says, hell, fine.
Yeah,
I don't understand why
fuck. Yeah.
What I didn't understand is why Joel and his brother didn't go together.
Yeah, like, I didn't understand what the entire point of that was to begin with. Like, it's not like Joel was going to go back to Boston, because there's nothing left in Boston. Why not? This is a stupid plan. Just go to, like, the college with her. You just need to know where the college is at. He's not like he's the only competent guy. And apparently Joel is way more competent of a tracker to begin with. So just do it yourself.
I don't know. There's a reasonable argument to be made that Joel is kind of incompetent. Like, he goes anywhere. He just makes as much noise as possible. There's always shocked that people have found him there.
Well, if you look at it, look, you know, you got to the dam, and how many of Tom's guys dies at the dam in the firefight? You know, you see at least a couple of the engineers dying.
Can I say how glad I am that you did not have to fight that armored car?
Yeah, I was convinced that I tried it. Anybody else try to, like, blow it up when you're trying to sneak past it? Because I had some grenades, and I thought, okay, obviously what you're supposed to do is throw the grenade underneath it to, like, disable it. I was like, no, that doesn't work.
I was convinced they were going to give me a rocket launcher at some point. I'm like, I don't want to fight this thing. Don't do that, video games.
Or like because, when you're in the sniper, position, it's like, oh god, I gotta shoot the driver through that little fucking slot, don't I? This is so stupid.
That actually doesn't work. You have to wait for him to pop out. Yep. And at some point, if you miss enough, he'll just keep popping out and doing nothing.
Yeah, he'll eventually just stay out like for like 5 seconds aiming his Molotov.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Video
but
games.
Like, this is such a big thematic and even gameplay improvement over Uncharted 2. And definitely over Uncharted 3, because that game sucked.
Definitely Uncharted 3, but apparently it's like their B team there, right?
Yeah.
What you guys tell them? Yeah.
Yeah. Who I hope is not making a Last of Us 2.
The thing is, sadly, they've already said something like, yeah, I guess we could make a sequel, yeah. And, you know, maybe Joel and Ellie wouldn't be the main characters, but they would be in the world somewhere.
They should not do that. That game stands fine on its own. If they try to exploit that IP, I'll probably play it, but it'll be disappointing all the same.
You know, like, what? I bet it's going to happen. You're going to get the Naughty Dog B team, the guys who worked on Uncharted 3 to make Last of Us 2, while the A team works on a new IP.
That's what I figured was going to happen, yeah.
Probably. I just want to just play the DLC for it, because I want Bill's adventure back to his safe room, because that would be a really great story to tell.
Honestly,
and some other things.
I don't feel like buying the DLC for that game at all, because it doesn't need it.
No,
you know,
if you expanded or explained anything else about that thing, I think it would fall apart. But like the characters are good enough that I do want to spend more time with some of the characters.
They should make the DLC just make sure it's not about Joel and Ellie. Just while they're off on their vacation or whatever, they have Joel's brother doing something.
You know, I've seen some people suggest that, you know, the groups in the sewer, which had an oddly fleshed out story in the notes-ish.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Some of the people have suggested, like, hey, maybe the DLC could be a story about Ish forming this colony, you know, establishing this place and how that place falls in the end.
I was convinced he was the guy that was sniping me, because there was no way they weren't just gonna, like, for all the notes they gave me?
Yeah.
Where the hell was that guy? Like, I didn't find anything about him dying.
I think he's, because when you... Stopped. I don't know, I think there was, the very last room in the sewers, where you like slam the door and then you see like, oh, by the way, there's zombies in there. Yeah. I think I may be imagining it, but I think there are like two zombies in there that were dressed like riot officers, and I think that may have been Ish and his partner.
Actually, in one of the little houses in the near that area, there's a letter saying like, yeah, you know, it written by Ish and a lady who just lost her kid, saying.
Yeah,
we lost this place, so we've got our supplies, and we're just going to move on, I guess.
Yeah, he was the one who put the machine in front of the tunnel.
That jerk.
But that part, by the way, where you, I can't remember, it might have been the hotel, actually, where Joel falls off on his own, and you meet the Phase 2 zombies.
Yeah.
That was fucking scary.
Yeah.
Because... I saw, like, the way they telegraph it is, I'm not even sure if it was, like, intentional or this is just happened to be the way it works, but you catch them out of the corner of your eye running down the tunnels, and those happen to be the places you need to go, then all of a sudden you just five of them on you.
Are the Phase 2 ones, are the ones that they call the stalkers or something?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What?
The ones that still run at you, but they ambush you.
So, I never ran into a single one of those in my game.
You've seen them.
Yeah,
you just probably
didn't
recognize
they're not very different from the stage ones.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just assumed like there were runners and clickers and bloaters. And it wasn't until like I finished the game that apparently there was something called stalkers.
You can find some notes that actually mention that like they have question marks for the name because they don't really know what they are quite yet. But you do fight some when you first get the Henry's brother, and you know how it splits and like Henry's with Ellie and you're with his little brother. And there's that room with a couple of clickers and, like, all these stalker women.
Oh, those.
I found that room, but I did too. I just, like, threw a bunch of Molotov cocktails in there and just basically incinerated everything. So
it kind of eliminates
anything in there.
Yeah, it kind of eliminates a stalking aspect if you're just, you know, you stand in one corner and fight them.
Yeah.
This is
what I did.
I just, you know, I made some noise and then this one came running in, then the other one just came running in. I just started beating on them with my 2x4.
if you try to stealth around that area, like it, by the time you get to the playpen, you'll probably end up getting ambushed.
All right.
I think if you're just really careful, like, and you find like all the alcohol that you can in the game, you can make enough Molotov cocktails where like most of the zombie encounters are kind of trivial as long as you don't fuck up, because the zombies just have no idea how to deal with fire. Because it makes
not only
no
that, noise. Yeah. Soldiers. That's how I played the entire game. I used probably over 50 Molotovs the entire game.
Really? You're using Molotovs? Huh.
I probably should have used like shivs more, because I used shivs maybe like 3 times, but I had this OCD thing of like I need to keep these at the maximum level. Yeah, so I'm just going to choke this guy out.
The entire game does that, because you're saying, oh, I don't have a need for the door. As soon as I realize you need them for the doors, I never use another shiv.
Yeah. And always, there's always more materials for a shiv inside there.
Yeah.
The one thing that always bugged me is that I've got 2 shivs, one full and one that's halfway broken. Mm-hmm. And he's always going to use the one that's full and not the one that's almost broken to break the to open the door.
Why don't you just find a goddamn knife? There's like tons of... We've crossed so many stores.
Just borrow Ellie's knife. Ellie has a really good knife, y'all. Just use hers. I'm sure she'll
doesn't
let
break her anything.
Yeah, it's great. I just like that you can take any weapon, like even one that's basically designed for killing, like say a machete, and you take a like scissors and just put it on the handle, and like you can kill a lot more things with that machete. I never realized that, and I really hope that we find new things to do with scissors, attached to like guns or swords.
Have you guys played the multiplayer?
I did briefly.
No.
Because strapping scissors to anything in the multiplayer is pretty much an I win button in that game.
Just kill everything in one hit?
Yeah, it's like you can just run into a room that 4 humans are in and just press square and everyone's dead.
Scissors, no! I must explain why they're so freaking rare.
This game is... I think this may be the most tense game I've ever played.
It's one of the most tense since like Dead Space, yeah.
I think it's way more tense than Dead Space. Dead Space had that thing where, like, this is the example I always use, but you go into a room full of, like you go into a laundry room, and there's washer machines everywhere. And, oh, I wonder what's going to happen here. And sure enough, necromorphs pop out of there.
They'll have the one that's shaking, is it just to, like, try and trick you a little bit, but the necromorph jumps out the one behind you, but you know it's going to happen.
Yeah. This one, like, to use an example, the one after Ellie escapes from the cannibals, and she's wandering around those storefronts. My hands were at one point literally shaking because a guy was coming up so close to me, and I couldn't do anything because if I tried to kill him, it would alert everyone else, and I wouldn't be able to make it out.
Yeah.
But so I've killed so many other people that if I mess this up, I have to do all that over again.
Yeah, I didn't kill anyone during that Ellie sequence except for David. Because again, I
had to kill
Ellie to be a murderer. You killed everyone there.
Well, I mean, I had to get out because once I crossed that main storefront, I just, you know, unless somebody was right up on me, I didn't bother killing them. But mostly because I was lost and I didn't have a good beat on like where everyone was coming from.
Yeah, I got super lost and killed everyone in that part.
The thing I noticed is that Ellie isn't very good at doing stealth kills. So even if you sneak up on someone's going to notice, or they're going to hear, and they're going to come running by.
Well, it had that weird moment where, like, you were stealth-killing people in, like, stores, and even though I knew it wasn't happening because they were non-interactive objects, I was really afraid that when I jumped up on someone's back and started stabbing them, they were going to swing me into one of the shelves and make a ton of noise.
That would have been great.
Yeah, it's but, like...
Ellie's idea of stealth kills, just jump on your back and just stab you repeatedly until you die.
But really, like, I know video games. I know what's going to happen if I do this, and I know that this is not an interactive object, but I was still afraid that that was going to happen.
That one thing was easily my other major complaint about the game. That entire kind of like pseudo boss fight you have with David, I ran David around that fucking burning building for 10 minutes trying to figure out what the game wanted me to do. Because the first time I jumped on him, like, it did nothing. I'm like, you stab him a couple of times, but he like throws you off. So it's like, oh well, I guess I'm not doing that anymore. It doesn't do anything. I guess I like just like run around and hope Joel shows up. I don't know. I lead him to the fire. I don't know. Just really.
See, I know what to do because Naughty Dog loves that boss fight. They love that particular kind where you lead a guy around until you can get behind him and hit him.
Okay.
Yep.
I guess that was that the boss fight from Uncharted 2?
Like
the final boss fight?
You had to use the fruit things.
It's Uncharted 1's final boss fight too.
I cheesed my way through that because it's so freaking difficult. I just found like an invincible rock to stand on top of that he couldn't reach me and just threw grenades at him.
I ended up cheesing my way through the final hospital because if you just run past people, like they'll see you and they'll shoot you, but if you get to the checkpoint area and then die, it'll assume you've killed everybody. Because why would you be there if you haven't?
It's kind of a forgiving game like that.
It is, but I'm not sure that was intentional. Oh, yeah. It was that last room that I had to end up throwing grenades everywhere. Because why the hell not? Just empty everything. It's weird that assault rifles aren't that good in that game. Like, you shoot a guy with 2 or 3 pistol shots and he's dead. You shoot a guy with 45 assault rifle bullets and he's still standing.
I think there's like this weird trope in video games where, because it's an M16, and like all the game developers hear about the M16 like bullet being small, they assume, oh, it doesn't actually do a lot of damage as compared to everything else. It's still a bullet going through you and still going to kill you. So
I think Naughty Dog really needs to get over their fetish for body armor.
Yeah.
Because that hurt the end of the game for me, is that that's one of the reasons I got so tired of it, is I love the game, don't get me wrong, but that
too many guys in helmets.
Yeah, I see guys in helmets and body armor, I'm like, fuck. That means I really have to aim or I can't get in combat.
Or you just strangle. Strangle still works if you have body armor on.
Or you just burn him to death. Throw a bottle, lure him in, throw him on the walls off.
They really shouldn't have worn flammable body armor.
That flamethrower was great.
The flamethrower was great. Especially when you set the doctor on fire. And just setting people on fire is great for like freaking out the other AI, because they'll come across the charred remains and say, oh shit, I have to run.
It's weird that sometimes they react to that sort of thing, and sometimes they don't react at all, like as if there were not a body there.
Yeah, that's a video gamey aspect to it. Like, if you kill a guy on his patrol and like another guy from another patrol just shows up, he'll just look at him and say, that's weird. Wonder why he's got an arrow sticking through his head. Whatevs. And keep on going.
That part where you have Henry with you and you're sneaking through like this really heavily fortified gang area and with the spotlight, and you kill the first couple of guys, and when you kill the spotlight guy, more people come down. So I laid like grenades down there for them to land on. Yep. And the first guy like sets off a grenade. Then the second guy like, what was that? Then comes down and sets off the other grenade. Like, what? You were standing right above him. Why would you?
Yeah.
So, since we've got into it, what was your style playing the games? Like, I was definitely afraid to fire an actual gun because of the noise it would make. Like in that spotlight, I ended up shooting the rifle to destroy a spotlight. But I didn't want to because it would make noise. Most of the time, I just used the bow and arrow when I upgraded that, and it stealthed my way through the game. And
You know you could turn off that generator up front, right?
Yeah, that's what I did.
Well, I guess I do now.
Yeah, you just turn the generator off. Like you're on side, you'd like place bombs like right as the big problem with the game is like it's very trial and error, so you don't know this until like the fourth or fifth time you like die, but they'll always jump down to the same place, so you just drop bombs right there, and then you turn off the generator, and then you go hide.
See, the trial and error aspect of that one really annoyed me, because the checkpoint is always at that first part of the hotel room.
Yeah.
Like, well, you're walking down, and you have to choke out these two guys, then I have to go gather these supplies, and then, oh, I'm full up on this, so I gotta make a med kit, then gather the rest.
Yeah.
It's like, just, like, give me a little bit more leniency here. Checkpoint me when I get to the door or something.
Yeah, it definitely needs to be at the door on that part. Some of the checkpointing is weird in this game.
Like, maybe they're afraid that, like, you're going to checkpoint yourself somewhere where you're going to be alerted, but I have a restart encounter button. Let me use that if that's the case.
Although the restart encounter will sometimes screw you over. Like, sometimes it's just way better to just die, because that checkpoint is different than the restart encounter checkpoint.
Restart encounter will always... It restarts the encounter. It will always go back to the very beginning. Dying will take you at some checkpoint that you don't know where that is.
I just like conserved like materials as much as I could. Like I very rarely actually shot a guy. Like there was a pact with the game developers. Like, okay, you could shoot everybody you want, but it becomes a worse game. So you kind of have to play along with the joke, where it's like, okay, I'm actually going to sneak around and stab people or choke them or, like, set them on fire. because it's a better game if I do that. I think that's a pact you make whenever you play a stealth video game. The same issue was with Dishonored. Like, you could kill everyone in there, and it's not a very fun video game. If you play it, go along with what the developers want, and it's way better.
Or, like, in the Hitman games, if you break stealth, you're gonna... You know, that game isn't designed, you know, for full-on firefights. They try to do that a bit more in Absolution, but the thing is, I've talked to people who, playing Last of Us, played it as a third-person shooter.
Right.
And
did they have fun?
Yeah, ever since the Jack game, specifically Jack 2, Naughty Dog has been kind of playing around with adaptive difficulty or changing things around if you're stuck in an area too long. So going by what I've heard and talked with people about Last of Us, the game kind of adapts the drops that spawn in a room to your play style after playing for a bit.
Which actually really screwed me up in the museum right after Tess died. There's that one section where you have to get past all those guards that I'm guessing that maybe they wanted to move people away in a way that like made it easier for me, but I don't know what they were thinking. So I kept, whenever I tried to do the same thing twice, whoops, that guy's going this way this time, and this guy's coming up behind me, and I'm caught. Oh, that was also the one where I got up on a table next to a guy as he was passing by, and he didn't notice me.
Yeah, I did the exact same thing where I just, like, as he's walking by, I just mantled the table and said, hey, what's up, dude? Let's keep walking. It's all right. See ya. Guess you have no purple vision. Yeah.
Then, like, 14 other people went down that hallway for no reason.
Yeah. Sometimes they're dicks in the patrols, and they just never follow the patrol ever again.
I do like that if you have your gun out, then they'll react differently to you. Like, if you just have your melee weapon out, they'll try and charge you. But if you have your gun out, they'll head back and try to find cover.
Holy shit, the guy's got a gun.
Yeah.
There's no cover for this 2x4, though, bitch.
Yeah, that happened to me in the last room after burning everyone to death and smoke bombing the rest and stabbing them. The last guy that was left, you know, I never had that thing of, hey, someone's just going to start backing off. So I just immediately equipped my shotgun and just came out and aimed at him. But he didn't shoot at me. He just walked, you know, backpedal away. And I just pretty much just ran off because I didn't have to shoot him.
And you shot him.
I didn't.
I've seen people actually legit run away before. Or hide themselves.
Yeah, I just assume they're going to get more friends, so I got to tone them down and kill them. No reason to let those guys live. So, yeah, anything else?
Yeah, we're coming down to this, so any thoughts?
The one thing that interested me about this was comparing to, like, Bioshock Infinite and Spec Ops. Because all three of these games are kind of about choice and how they react to choice. Like, Bioshock Infinite's entire deal was, like, choices in a video game are a complete sham. We're not going to give you any choice, and we're going to show you the choices you do have go back to the same thing. This game, it'll actually give you choice, and the choices don't matter, but it gives you the choice anyway, because you feel better to have that choice.
So. Actually, in tone, I thought that Last of Us was closer to Spec Ops than Bioshock.
Yeah. Because, I mean, I don't know that at any point in Last of Us I felt... It's not that I felt like a horrible monster, it's that I felt bad because I didn't feel like a horrible monster. That this is all stuff felt really necessary, and I didn't question it.
Well, like, the big moral thing in this one is, like, when you lie to Ellie about the Fireflies being completely a sham. And it's like, you're not actually playing Joel at that point in time, so it's not actually your choice at all. So, I don't know if it's, like, the same thing as Spec Ops: The Line. In that, it's not actually your character doing that, it's happening to you.
Well, I mean, they never use Ellie's relationship with Joel, like, they never use gameplay to stretch that out, or to impound, what's the word I'm looking for, to actually, like, further that at all. Every time gameplay is used, it's only for tension. I think maybe the only example I can think of of using Ellie for gameplay is when, at the final chapter, when you are trying to do, like, a boost up, and she's just not there. And that's probably... Like, it was early on in the train station. You're like, you're trying to do a boost up, and she's sitting down, and she's thinking.
Oh, yeah. Right.
And, like, there's just nice... There's a look on Joel's face, like, Ellie, what are you doing?
Yeah. And you have to convince her to go over to you.
Yeah. And that was a good way to use gameplay to it, but for the rest of the thing, it's all pretty much ambient dialogue and cutscenes. Which were good, don't get me wrong, but gameplay was pretty much as...
Too bad they didn't integrate it more.
Yeah. Which maybe they just don't do that. Like, Uncharted didn't do it, none of the other Naughty Dog games really do.
I think probably
you guys ever not talk to Ellie when the optional prompt appeared? Because I've heard from people, and I guess I've read a review that said that if you don't talk to her, if you just ignore her, her attitude towards Joel is somewhat different.
I talk to her every time.
I didn't catch all of them because it was difficult for me to catch, because I have this bad thing in any of these types of video games. If there's collectibles or things they want me to gather, I'll just be doing that instead of like interacting with people. So there were probably a lot of little opportunities where I missed that dialogue and I was grabbing like a pair of scissors instead.
Yeah.
What did you guys think of the swimming in the game, by the way?
Terrible. It absolutely need to go away. It added nothing aside from the cute little parts where you like put Ellie on a raft,
which she eventually got sick of.
Yeah, which made it great. You've got that thing again. Damn it!
I didn't
and it always happened to be like a perfectly intact one, right where you need it.
Yeah.
I didn't mind the swimming that much, but it was like, oh great. I guess I'll go look for this little cargo thing so she can climb on. And it's like, gonna fetch it, gonna swim over there, gonna drag her over there, then climb somewhere else. And it was exactly the same thing. It's not like the latter sort of planks where the things are solved almost immediately. You actually have to fight the controls a bit to go underwater and find the thing.
They felt like kind of game padding.
Yeah. I don't know if their attempt to add in like some exploration or platforming elements to it, but it did seem a lot like busy work. And there was that one at the dam, which there's this one pallet that's hidden, that's jammed underneath like a submerged house. For the life of me, I could not find that fucking thing for like half an hour. I assume my game was bugged. No, it was just trapped. There's only one that was underwater you had to find.
There are some bugs. I know somebody was asking me for help on Twitter because they, in the railway station with Tess and Ellie, they couldn't actually get like the ladder to come down, and the game just never recognized that it was a thing that they could interact with. So they had to restart the encounter, and then it finally worked.
Yeah, the bit where you have to like look around for the ladder and hit triangle is very iffy at points. Like the little like hitbox you need to like stare at is very narrow.
Yeah.
Which is annoying when there's like three clickers converging on you at any given time.
Yeah. All right, Joe, final thoughts on the game?
I don't really have anything to add. it's all been said at this point.
Yeah, we've been talking a while about it.
I welcome whatever this team from Naughty Dog has next, and that's not something I thought I would say after Uncharted 3.
Yeah, such a tonal shift. It doesn't seem like they could possibly be made by the same people.
Yeah, it was. I played Uncharted 3 in this back-to-back, and it was really apparent that the difference. Yeah.
Yeah, they learned a lot, if nothing else.
Honestly,
hopefully the next game is this big jump that they had from this one.
I actually kind of felt like an indie game at times for me, because where the Jack and the Uncharted games, they felt like video game ass video games, but this didn't feel like a game at times. You know, it was just,
yeah,
it felt like a complete experience. It wasn't trying to be something. Oh, I don't know.
I thought it was very... Even at the end, it was just about you killing a bunch of guys and zombies and setting them on fire. But despite all of that, it was a very quiet, reflective video game. And we don't see that sort of thing. Like, right now, video games are in this point where they just want to be as loud and brash and, like, as big a spectacle as possible. And this like, kind of pulled away from that. I thought it was beautiful for what it was.
Yes, yeah, exactly. Like, where in the Uncharted games, you've got these massive set pieces, explosions, you know, all this stuff, you know, guns blazing. Here, it's pretty much the complete opposite of those games in a way. It's just calm.
Yeah, like the pilot moments are just like the quiet little moments you have with Ellie. Just like teach her how to whistle or how to play football.
This game, well, let's compare this game and the Walking Dead game to like, the Walking Dead TV show. I don't know if any of you guys watched that, but it shows kind of. Let's say all these things are 14 hours. A 14-hour season of The Walking Dead, 14 hours of the game, 14 hours of The Last of Us. In those 14 hours with these two games, with The Walking Dead game and The Last of Us, it does more to show interpersonal relationships than that TV show could at all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because you're that character.
It's the advantages of this medium if they would just, you know, stop going the like the COD route where everything has to be a huge spectacle and you're just, you know, one-upping yourself every single year. Just saying.
I mean, if they made The Last of Us about spectacle, it would be a different game. I don't know that it would necessarily be worse, but I think the bigger issue is that they spent time trying to make you care about these characters.
Yeah. And in the end, that's really about what art is, isn't it? It's just you form that emotional reaction to it, whatever it may be. It's like there's so many other teams that would have just handled this so clumsily. And this shows you how it could be, how it creates its own medium.
There's so many other teams that would have been like, okay, we need to show off that you play as Ellie in this section.
Yeah.
And that would have just completely dulled the impact of when Joel's passing out and nearly dying, it says Winter, and then you realize you're Ellie.
Yeah. And you just the dread that passes over you as this happens.
I think we should... It was a great game.
Yeah. We'll wrap it up there, because that is the sentiment that I'm coming away the last of it. We'll find out in 6 months whether it makes our Game of the Year list. I'm sure it's going to be on mine somewhere.
Just incredibly strong year of just this BioShock Infinite, and just we're not even close to seeing what's coming out for Christmas yet. It's going to be amazing here.
So, guys, thank you all for coming here. We'll talk about The Last of Us.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
And we'll wrap this up, and there'll be a regular free-to-play this week. And I don't know if you listen to this later, but whatever.
Yeah.
See you guys later.
All right. See ya.
See ya.
Later.